as one gets to Vayigash, perhaps one of the most famous midrashim, really much of Torah, exists on this pasuk. So 45:3, the pasuk says, "Vayomer Yosef el Achav, ani Yosef, ahod avi chai." Right? Yosef says to his brothers, "I am Yosef, ahod avi chai, v'lo yachlu achav lanososo." And his brothers weren't able to answer from him, "Ki nivhalu mipanav," because they were. So it's unclear what Nifhalu means. The article translated as disconcerted before him. Rashi says, Mifnei Habusha, because of embarrassment. They were just, it was impossible for them to be able to give an answer. So the Medrash, in the famous comment, says, in Medrash, in Bereishis Rabba, Tzadi Gimel Yud, Vayitines kolo bevechi, that he Yosef started crying. And the brothers weren't able to answer him because they were, again, that same word, disconcerted in front of him. So Abba Cohen Bardala Omer. So Abba Cohen says, Bardala says, Oy lanu miyom hadin, oy lanu miyom hatochacha. Woe unto us from the day of judgment, and woe unto us from the day of tochacha. Reproof. What?
Cursing.
Not really cursing. What? Which word? Tochacha, admonition, or we'll see a little bit clearer what it is. Hochacha, tochacha, but some type of musr, some type of reproof. So woe unto us in the day of judgment, woe unto us for the day of reproof. And then it gives two examples. Number one is actually, even though it appears in Medrash Bereishis, it starts with Bilam. Bilam Chacham Shalakum. Bilam was the wisest people of all of the non-Jews. Haya, velo haya yachol lamod besochacha shalasono. And he wasn't able to stand up to the musr of his donkey. As it says, haskein hiskanti lasos l'chako. That the donkey turned around to Bilam after he had stopped and after Bilam beat it up. So the donkey turns around to Bilam and says, would I purposely be putting you in danger? We've known each other for so long. Would I be all of a sudden be doing something for you? And Bilam responds, Vayomer, lo. This is no. Other than saying lo, Bilam is speechless. So that's example number one that the Medrash gives. And then the Medrash turns around and says, oh, and Yosef ketanon shel shvatim haya. Right? Yosef was the youngest of all of the shvatim. Below hayu l'cholim lamo b'sochachto. And they were not able to withstand his rebuke, his musr. So, velo yachlu, as its pasuk says, velo yachlu achav lanososo, ki nephalim yifonav, they weren't able to answer him, for they were disconcerted in front of him. L'cheshu yavu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'yochach kol echad ve'echad l'fi mashahu, and in the future, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give us, all of us, he's going to give musr as is appropriate. Shemar ochichach ve'eracha le'necha, I will reprove you, and I will make you place a value in your eyes. Oh, have that Tanakh. You have a Tanakh here? That might be, but that's not what the Medrash says. The Medrash just says that there is some type of rebuke that's going on here. So the question that one can then think about is, well, where exactly is the rebuke? Yosef didn't actually say anything to them. Yosef didn't say, you're evil. In fact, the donkey itself didn't say anything to Bilam saying, you're evil. Just said, what are you doing? Right. Yosef said, my father alive. Okay. He didn't say, you nincompoops. He didn't say, you dastardly evil people. He just said, I'm Yosef. And that was considered the Yom HaDin. That was considered the Yom HaTochacha. That was considered the ultimate rebuke that he possibly could have gotten. Right? So where's the rebuke?
Because it became clear
that... So let's start with Bilam. That by Bilam it says... What? Right. So let's start with Bilam. So what was the reproof that the donkey gave Bilam? So the Yosef Seir Chaim points out that rather than looking at the words that the donkey said, look at how the Medrash sets it up. The Medrash sets it up with, Bilam was the wisest of all people. Why is that relevant to the section right now? That the donkey turned around to him and said, Bilam, you're the wisest of all people. Can you please think? Can you please think straight? Like for somebody, like this line after somebody so smart, you really do a lot of dumb things sometimes, right? So that was the claim that was being made to Bilam. You're so smart. Can you figure out if I'm not moving, and obviously if there's something that's holding me up. Obviously, there's some reason why I'm doing so. I've never done this before to you, and all of a sudden now I'm doing it to you. Use your head a little bit, Bilam, and you'll realize that I'm really doing the right thing. Right? Zui tochacha sa'ason madu eincha choshev. Right? This was tochacha of the donkey. Why are you not thinking? Think about it for a minute. Tachshuv tisponein makarekan. Figure out what's going on here. If you're so smart, if you're so, why aren't you using your head? Right? If you see the donkey is not moving three times, sit down, investigate, and figure out why he's not doing it. So the musr to Bilam was, you're not thinking. And that's what that's then the musr of the Bilam part. That's considered the Yom HaDin, when a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to come and say, maybe if you would have thought about things a little bit more, you would have acted differently. And that's the musr, right? Think for a moment. If you would think, you'd realize the distance between what you could have been versus what you became. He continues by quoting, yeah.
The mere fact that a donkey is talking to him, speaking to him, there must be something going on that's greater than just...
Right, but that already is that's already once it happened. I mean, that's already the line itself. That's already after the action. That's not really the reproof for the action. The actions were hitting the donkey, driving the donkey crazy. So the musr for that action was the donkey turning around and saying, "Hello, dummy, think about it." Okay. Okay, but that's fine. But then, if you didn't speak, then there'd be no musr. Okay. Fine. So there is this. There's a Gemara. There's a somewhat complicated couple of psukim towards the very end of Parshas Chukas. They lay out over the course of the last section some of the battles that took place. That Bnei Yisrael was involved in some battles that Bnei Yisrael wasn't involved in, which actually has relevance for where Bnei Yisrael was allowed to capture. But Bnei Yisrael is not only allowed to attack certain nations and not others. So there were some manipulations that took place where some countries became stronger than others in order so that there'd be the possibility of the Israelites taking over who they were supposed to take over. So there is this very cryptic pasuk that appears towards the very end of Parshas Chukas, discussing some of these things, and it says, "Vayishlach kiishetz al kein yemru amoshlim ba'ucheshbon tivenevit." Let's go to the pasuk before. Ki cheshbon ir sichon melch amarihi. So there was this place called Cheshbon. There was a city of Sichon, king of the Amorites, right? But who nilcham melch Moav harishon, and he fought with the Moabites. By kachas kol arzom miyado ad Arnon, and then they took all the land until Arnon. Right. So that's important because the melch amari took land from Moab. Moab is one of the nations that Bnei Yisrael is not allowed to attack. So they took more land from Moab, allowing Bnei Yisrael to be able to take to destroy the Amorites and getting a little more land. Okay. And then it says, Al Kain, Yomru Hamoshlim Ba'u Cheshbon. Right, regarding this, the poets would say, right, Yomru Hamoshlim, those that make mashalim, those that make parables. So the poets would say, Bo Cheshbon, come to Cheshbon, Ti Benevisi Konein Ir Sichon. Let it be built and established as a city of Sichon. And then Ki Eish Yatzam Mi Cheshbon, because the fire came from Cheshbon, Lahava Mikrat Sichon. Came forth from Cheshbon, a flame from the city of Sichon. Achla Ar Moab, Baleba Mozar, consumed Ar of Moab, and the masters of Armon's heights. And this is Eilucha Moab, Adhaim Kamoshin, if you lost that Moab, etc. So what in the world is going on here? Fire is going to leave Cheshbon and enter into Sichon. What's going on? So the Gemara in Baba Basra says, I'll tell you, Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mai Dixiv, what does it mean? Al Kain Yomru HaMoshlim, that the Moshlim, the poets would say, HaMoshlim, Eilu HaMoshlim B'Yitzram. So the Moshlim, these are the ones who rule their desires. Moshlim might be those who make mashalim, those who make parables, but Moshel is also those that are the rulers. The rulers say, Bo cheshbon, bo v'nachshov cheshbonu shel olam. Come to cheshbon, let us make a cheshbon. Let us make an assessment of this world. Hefsid mitzvah keneged tzchara, the mitzvah's loss against its gain, utzchar veir keneged hefseda, and the sin's gain against its loss. And then tivanevisi konein, you will then build and you will establish. Imata osechein tivanabo lamazevisi konein lamaba. Right, you'll be able to have a built up this world and you'll be established in the next world. However, ir Sichon, what's the city of Sichon though? Im mesim atam atzmo ka'ayerze. A person doesn't take that advice, but instead make themselves like a foal, F-O-A-L, a foal, right?
A deer.
A deer.
A young deer.
A young deer is a foal, not a young horse.
Oh, horse.
Yeah. Young horse. Okay, a horse and deer, both of them.
No horse.
Okay, good. That's what I thought. All right. Shemahalich achar sichanaha, that they will follow gentle talk. So maksiv achar. So what does it say afterwards? Keish yatzam micheshbon, teitze ish micheshbon. So the fire is going to ultimately come from the cheshbon. Those that plan, those that establish, those that work things out, and they're ultimately going to come, go and destroy those that were just involved with sichon. Those that were just involved with idle discussion. Those that were involved with the sweet talk. That ultimately those that think things through. Those that have a cheshbon on the world, those that make an analysis of the world, they're ultimately going to be the ones that are going to be victorious. And that was the message to Bilam. So a similar message is then going to the brothers of Yosef, that what was it exactly that was considered the Musar of Yosef that made them speechless and made them unable to respond? So the Tochacha was Tochacha Milashon Hochacha. That the, what does the word Tochacha mean? Tochacha doesn't necessarily mean, it means rebuke, that's the way it's normally translated, but it comes from the word Hochacha. What is a Hochacha? So if you take out Google Translate and you write in the word hochacha, the word proof will come out. Right? Tochacha, while we refer to it as rebuke, it really means just proof. It just means obvious. Right? All of a sudden, Yosef gave a message to them and everything became obvious. Lochiach esa ovdos kemoshehin lelo tosefes hasvarim habiurim. To prove all the things that happened without any explanation. Why didn't Yosef have to give them any musar? Because no musar was necessary. And they realized that even though in the past they were they had good, they might have had intentions, they may have thought about things, and what was the reason that they gave, what was the assumption that they had in order to allow them to sell Yosef down to Mitzrayim, what were they thinking? Well, Yosef is a rodef, and even though even later on in Perek Mem Beis Pasuk Chaf Aleph 42:21, they had a little bit of charata, right? After Yosef took one of the brothers,
Shimon.
After they took Shimon, did he take Shimon at that point?
Mm-hmm. When he says we because we treated them bad, when he screamed, you don't let us go.
Yeah, right. That is right. So they're holding Shimon back, and they're telling the rest of the brothers, "Listen, you can go and you can come back. Bring Binyamin back, and then I'll let Shimon go free." So what do they say to him? By Yomru Ish Alachim, they said to one another, "Aval Ashemim Anachnu Alachinu. We were Ashem. We sinned with regards to our brother. Asher Isat Tsaras Nafshu Bischanu Elenu Velo Shamanu. That we saw the tsar of his face and we didn't listen. Alkein Ba Elenu Atzarazos. Therefore, we're having this tsar." So that means it sounds like they had charata over the whole sale of Yosef, except they didn't. The Sforno points out that what did they have charata over? I think might have done this the first time. What was their charata? The charata was that they were mean. The charata is that they regretted that we were so mean to Yosef. The fact that Yosef had to die, the fact that Yosef had to be erased, gotten rid of, well, that we understand that. That was necessary. He was a rodef. He had reasons. He was making these dreams and was subjecting us to a future that would have been hopeless for us. There was good reason why we had to get rid of Yosef. There wasn't such a reason that we had to make him suffer. And we're suffering because of that suffering. We're not suffering because of the entire cheshbon. That's what the Sforno points out, right? They never actually regretted the idea of selling Yosef down until, says the Sifrei Chaim, until this point. this point. Now they realize that they were wrong in selling him down in the first place. They realize that Yosef was only revealing to them the truth. They realize that Yosef had no intention of sending them to Gehenim or any of those types of things. Yosef wasn't going to speak. Yosef was just telling the truth. And the brothers had that realization. They were speechless. All the years of excuses and all the years of them perhaps lying to their father and them lying to themselves and convincing themselves that they were really doing the right thing all along. So all of that came to a head right now, and they were confronted with the truth. I remember listening many years ago already. This is one of one of the early ones. Rabbi Friend had developed a whole tshuva drasha on this idea. Rabbi Friend every year gives a very large tshuva drasha in Brooklyn, and this must have been in the mid '90s. And I heard it. I have a cassette tape someplace. If anybody actually still has a cassette player and wants to listen to it, but this is one of the famous drashas that he gave. Oy lanu yom adin, oy lanu yom tochacha. Woe unto us, because the truth are confronted with the truth, and the truth hurts. And over the course of Rosh Hashanah, over the course of Yom Kippur, we think about Yom Kippur has idea of tshuva. Rosh Hashanah has very little tshuva built into the liturgy of Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is all about malchus. Rosh Hashanah is all about shofar. It's all about the kingdom of Hashem. It's all about Hashem remembers us, and it's about shofar. What is that? It's just a recognition that we have a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and in the face of that relationship, how can we do some of the things that we do? That's the Musar Rosh Hashanah. Not the specific acts, but rather the entirety of the existence that we are confronted with, and that's then when we have to respond. Yeah, we're speechless. We don't have a response to them. It takes a little bit of time until Yom Kippur when you can actually say, okay, let's go back and figure out what we're going to actually ask, what we're going to change, and how things are going to change, and why things are going to be different, etc., etc. And that is the continuation of the Medrash. The Medrash continues on and says, the Cheshayeva Kadosh Baruch Hu v'yochiach l'chol echad l'fi mashu shenem. In the future, Hashem is going to come. He's going to give everybody Musar. As it says, I rebuke you and I lay out in front of your eyes. Hashem says, I will lay out. Well, what does it mean Hashem is going to lay out in front of our eyes? So it could be that Hashem is not going to say anything. He's not going to say anything. He's just going to say, this is what you could have been, and this is what you are. And that is the ultimate, rebuke. He tells a story here. I remember Rav Dessler was sitting Shiva for his wife. And he doesn't relate it back to the wife. He just says Rav Dessler was sitting Shiva for his wife, and he mentions there's a minhag of the Chevra Kedisha. I don't know if we have any Chevra Kedisha members here, but that they would finish up, they would whisper the name of the mace to that person. They would say his name. Right? What's the reasoning? Shemo and why? Shelo yishka hashemo lasid levos, that they don't forget their name. What's going on here? Right, we're going to tell the mace their name so that they don't forget their name. What is that a reference to? So I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Right? Those psukim that appear at the end of the Shemone Esrei. Right, so that he makes reference to that they would refer to the name in that way. If you look in our school siddur, other siddurim as well, at the very end of Shemone Esrei, it says some people insert their verse here, and back of the art school siddur has a list of psukim depending on what your first letter of your name and the last letter of your name, so you figure out what the pasuk is that fits in. So it says the Sifsei Chaim, I guess in the name of Rav Dessler, it says the purpose of that is that the Chevra Kedisha whispers to the person, this is your essence, this is what you really are. And over the course of one's life, people build their lives. He quotes here from Rav Chaim Vital in the Shari Kedusha that all of the mitzvahs that a person does, so they build themselves up over time. That they build arms and legs and whatever the image of a person is, whatever it means to be the Tzelem Elokim, whatever that means, you work on that over the course of your life, depending on the mitzvahs that you do. And the same thing works the opposite way. That any averos that a person does, anything that a person does is incorrect, so that diminishes what their image is. So then when one day you have a chance to compare. When we have a chance to compare in the future, that Hashem is going to then reveal to us, this is what I envisioned for you, these are the skills I gave you, these are the personality traits that I gave you, and you're supposed to turn to this. And then you'll see what you actually did turn into, and that comparison could be difficult to grasp. That's what it means by the Yom HaDin and the Yom HaTochach. Yeah?
There's a parallel with Marshall before a baby is born, and he knows all the Torah, he knows it, and then something happens just before he's born, and he forgets it also.
Okay, it could be. Yeah, you know, that for sure is true. The Gemara Nida discusses that before a person, a child is born, they're told all the Torah in the mother's stomach, not stomach, but in the womb, and then gets some kind of knock from a malach and forgets it all. There's a journey song along those lines as well. Yeah, wants to find it. Come with me, little Nishamala, let me. Whatever. I'm serious. It's really a beautiful song. So that's what the.
I heard that example that you gave is why the Kehenna is, you know, a party with them, or the Kulpurgis or that's the ultimate suffering that a person can experience, is to realize, you know, what he could have been.
Right. Right, so that's the medrash. That's what that becomes clear. And all of the excuses that a person gave, and all the reasons that a person gives over the course of their life as to why they're not doing X, or why they're not doing Y, so that ultimately melts away. But sometimes it doesn't melt away. Sometimes there's good reasons, and that's why you're not becoming that. But sometimes it melts away, and you see that there weren't really reasons that were insurmountable. I really could have become the person that I thought it would be, that I should have become. Yeah. So along those lines, thinking that these were originally two different pieces of Torah, then I realized that no, they go pretty well together. That at the very end of the parsha, at the end of this perek, so the brothers come back to Yaakov, and they tell him, by the way, Yosef's alive, right? Right? So by Lumi Mitzrayim, by Avo Eretz Canaan, so they leave Mitzrayim, they come to Canaan, Al Yaakov Avichem, and they go to Yaakov, their father. Pasuk Chavav. By Vayagidu Lo, 26. Vayagidu Lo Limor, Od Yosef Chai, V'chi Moshe B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. They tell him, David, good news! Yosef is still alive, and he's the ruler of all of Egypt. Vayafa Glibo, his heart stops, Ki Lohem Min Lahem, because he didn't believe them. And his heart stops because he didn't believe him. Now, how the Yafag Libo, how that fits, is unclear. But what's Yaakov's reaction? Yaakov's reaction is, I don't believe you. He didn't believe the brothers. Comes the Abbas to Rabbi Nassan. And Abbas Rabbi Nassan is an elongated version of the Pirkei Avos. So 40-something prophet instead of 6. So it has a line there, Kach Onsho Shel Bedai, that this is the punishment of a liar, Shafila Amar Emes Ein Shomen Lo, that even after he speaks the truth, they don't listen to him. Even after he speaks the truth, they're not believed. I mean, the brothers had lied. He goes, and the Avos Rebbe, I don't have the Avos Rebbe Nassim front of me. The Avos Rebbe Nassim goes on to say that the brothers lied to him and told, you know, they showed him the coat, and the coat had blood on it, and they misled Yaakov to believe that Yosef had actually died. So now when they're actually coming back and telling him the truth, Yaakov still doesn't believe them.
Why does his heart stop?
The Russian parable.
The boy who crowned wolf. That's a Russian parable? I thought it was from Confucius. Okay. Wolf. Yes, the boy who cried wolf is the similar idea. So that's his punishment. That even now when he tells the truth, so he's not believed. The Gemara tells a similar story by Avram Avinu, that Avram Avinu, when he was attempting to do the Akedas Yitzchak, because he was taking Yitzchak to be what he thought was going to be sacrificed, so the Satan comes over to him and keeps on trying to convince him not to go, and he keeps telling him all of these things. Finally, the Satan realizes he's not being successful, so he tries a new tact. He says, Amar Lei, he says, Ve'ilai Davar Yugunav, as for me, a message came to me. I was able to pick up a message. Kach Shamati Me'achori HaPargot, I heard from behind the car pargoed, I heard from behind the curtain, Haseli Olam Ein Yitzhak Liola, that the lamb is going to be the offering and Yitzhak's not going to be the offering. Right, it ends up being true.
Right.
Right? But Amar Lo, Hashem, Avram says to him, Kach Unchil Shel B'dai, Shefilu Amar Emes Ein Shomer Lo. This is the punishment of somebody who is always lying, that even when you're telling the truth, you're not going to be listened to. Right? So it's a similar concept. That somebody who keeps lying, so they're not going to be believed. The only problem with that is Gemara in Maseches Sota. So we made a scene on Maseches Sota last week. So we'll go all the way back to the beginning of Sota. Tesam Beis, it tells the story of Shimshon and Delilah. So what would be the problem there?
Which
one is it? Sota 9b, Tesam Beis. So it tells the story of Shimshon and Delilah. So where? How does that story seem to contradict what you're saying here? Anybody know? How does that story contradict this line? So
she lied to him constantly, but he still believed them.
The other flip.
No, he lied to her. It works. Oh, yeah,
right, he lied to her. She kept asking where his strength come from, and he kept giving her lies. So finally, he told her the truth. And the pasuk says, "Vatera Delilah ki yigidla es kol libo." That Delilah saw that he had told her all that was in his heart. So how'd she know? How'd she know? Why'd she believe him at that point? So the Gemara answers, "Amar Rabbi Chanin, Amar Rav, Nikarin Divrei Emes." Because true words are recognizable. When a person tells the truth, you know. Abaya Amar, well, Yadva Ba'osutzai, the little mapik shinish mayim lamatala. She knew that he wouldn't say Hashem's name in vain. So once he said Nazir Lukimani, Amar, she said Hashta Vade Kushta Amar. Must be that he's telling him the truth, right? So the question still exists with the second one, but certainly according to what Rav Chanin said, Nikarim Divrei Emes, that words of truth are recognizable. So wait a second, how does that fit with the Gemara Sanhedrin, where Yaakov didn't believe the brothers? Right, the Torah points out that eventually they convinced him. They only convinced him with the proofs and with the wagons and the food, right? And maybe Binyamin or maybe not. Right, that part's unclear. But they had to convince him. He didn't believe them right away. Why not? Nikarim Divrei Emes, right? The words of truth are supposed to be recognizable.
Well, you start with when you study truth detection. You take a lie detector test, right? And lie detector test is
We're running out of time. Okay, so right, if you talk about the lie detector test, how does the lie detector test work? So lie detector tests work that if a person is lying, they feel stress, right? So that stress then causes the machine to bounce up and down, and therefore you know the guy is lying. How does one beat a lie detector test? How is it possible to beat it? If you're a professional liar, if you're a con artist, and you don't feel any stress, right? Or what?
Put a tack in your shoe.
You put a tack in your shoe. Or if you actually believe the lie. Right?
Right.
If you actually believe it. So I found this in my notes. I think I came up with it myself, but maybe I might be quoted from somebody else. But the if one looks carefully at the words of the Avos de Rabbi Nasan, you look carefully at the words of the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which talks about the lion and the Zotha, what word does it use? It says Shemat Michori Apar, right? Kach Onsho Shel Badai. This is the punishment of the liar. Shafil Amar Emes Ein Shomer Lo. Anyone tells the truth, we won't listen to him. What does it mean? Kach Onsho Shel Badai. What is a Badai? A Badai is a liar. Right? A Badai is somebody who has become a liar. That has become his profession. That has become what they stand for. They have altered themselves. They become different than what their essence is. So therefore, since they've become so separated, so therefore they're not going to be believed. You don't know what to believe anymore. They've totally altered themselves. Right? And therefore the brothers, who that was the punishment to them, that was the musr to them, you're not who you're supposed to be. All the reality that you built up is totally false. So therefore they weren't believed when they came back to Yaakov, as opposed to Shimshon. Shimshon, when he was lying, was alternate, but he never really left who he was. He was always Shimshon. So once Shimshon said, "No, I'm a Nazir Elokim, I'm Nazir," so I realized, no, that's the real Shimshon. Maybe I finally recognized who you really are. So, okay. We'll be zocha to think about our Yom HaDin now and be able to make all the necessary corrections before ultimately it becomes necessary. What?